Welcome to Thriving at Work, a Worker Being podcast. Today, we're going to be joined by Jeffrey M. Roche, who is the Director of Workforce Development in North America for Siemens Healthineers. He's going to talk a little bit about some of the interesting work he's doing in healthcare and thinking about employee and workforce wellness broadly. So we're excited for you to hear this conversation. As always, if you need to reach us, you can email us at contact@workerbeing.com. Find us on our website. You can also sign up for our newsletter in our show notes. And we also have all the contact information for our guest as well. We've got his LinkedIn there. He's very open to having conversations with folks. So please add him, reach out if you have questions, and we hope you enjoy the show. Hi, I'm Dr. Patricia Grabarek.
And I'm Dr. Katina Sawyer, and welcome to Thriving at Work, a Worker Being podcast. Today, we are so excited to have Jeffrey M. Roche here to talk to us about his work in workforce development. We can't wait to learn more about him, and so we're really excited to have you here. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
We'd love for you to tell us a little bit about yourself, your current role, and how you got interested in the work you do today.
Yeah. So let me just, you know, applaud both of you for having such an important podcast and dialogue. Obviously, you know, I started my career in hospital administration back in June of 2008. I'm the son of a nurse, and so I was really inspired in many ways by my mother to serve in healthcare, but never clinical, but always in an administrative capacity. And from my early days, I was always engaged in our organizational culture. Actually, while I never worked in human resources, I always was, during my time in healthcare, was a senior advisor to our president and CEO, and particularly was charged with partnering with human resources on mission, vision, values, and carrying out all of those things. And so I've now had the privilege to do that in the healthcare system, then actually moved into academia and served on the cabinet at two different academic institutions, still having a very active role in those aspects as well. And then actually, you know, was recruited into this inaugural role at Siemens Healthineers to really focus externally, not internally. How do we help our hospitals and healthcare systems that we work with to think about the next generation of the healthcare workforce? And you can't think about and build that if you also don't think about culture, and if you don't think about workforce well-being, and you don't think about mind, body, spirit, etc. And so that's a lot of the work that I do, is very focused on current, but also future. And really contributing as a thought leader into their work.
Yeah, that's awesome, because you kind of reflect a lot of what our partnership reflects, which is sort of a marriage of part of practice and academics. And so that's part of why your work resonates so much with us. And we're excited to hear more. And I'm sure our audience will be interested as well, because those are the sorts of people we attract. So you mentioned workplace wellness and workforce well-being. And I'm wondering what, in your words, it means to support the development of workforce well-being.
Yeah. You know, it's so much. And I always say that it starts with thinking about, as an organization, how we support our workforce from a mind, body, and spirit perspective. But I'm a big proponent of Dr. Vivek Murthy's mental health and well-being work. I'm regularly shocked at the number of organizations, particularly in healthcare, that are not leveraging and utilizing his mental health framework for employers, because he is the Surgeon General and he's rolled it out as the Surgeon General. But I recently, you know, was in a group at a healthcare system, and I asked every executive member there whether they were using it, and no one was. Last year I spoke at HIMSS, and I asked a room full of several hundred people, executives, leaders across various different healthcare organizations, and no one even knew about it. And it shocks me that we have, you know, this framework out there that really speaks about a number of things. One, that you have to matter at work, and that you can't really have a healthy workplace if you don't demonstrate that everybody matters, and that they can feel a sense of belonging, but also a sense of sense of feeling that they're valued. The other piece I would say is really critical is that element where you have respect for worker autonomy. And that fact, which we know does not always exist in a lot of organizations at all different sizes, but it's so important. And so for me, it's really that element of health, mind, body, spirit, but then also thinking about the sense of belonging, the sense of mattering, but then also the autonomous feeling as well.
Yeah, and like all the research that we always talk about kind of touches on those things as well. Like, it's just so important. And it is unfortunate that people are not using this framework that's been laid out to kind of help support their workforce. Why do you think that is? What is the challenge that healthcare organizations have in implementing these things, or really, you know, getting any support in place to help their employees?
You know, I think healthcare, like other industries, is always dealing with sort of the matter at hand, right? And so, you know, there's the patient care side, and then there's also the workforce crisis of the moment, which is very real. It doesn't matter what hospital you go into, every single hospital, from an academic medical center to a small regional community hospital in rural America, they're all dealing with workforce crises. So sometimes it makes it difficult to focus on these things, but I would challenge that. And I regularly do challenge that, because if we dealt with these things, we wouldn't deal with the same level of the workforce crisis that we're dealing with. We wouldn't have recruitment challenges. We wouldn't have retention challenges. We may have challenges at times, but the reality is if we're an employer that demonstrates this sense of belonging, this sense of respect, appreciation, valuing, mattering, people are going to want to be there. They're going to leave wherever they are and want to be there. Because we've all faced that in our career. If there's a sense that you just, I remember my first job, it was an amazing healthcare system. I never would have thought leaving it because it was just such a great community. Every day didn't feel like work. It truly felt like I was just going in, helping people, serving people, and having impact. And I think we have to get back to that. And I would challenge every executive in healthcare, every board member in healthcare, which people will regularly hear me say, the governing structure has to start at the top. They also have to feel that these issues matter. And I would challenge them to prioritize it, because truly we know lives are on the line. I always say, go back to the fact that not too many months ago, there was a letter to the editor written in Ohio of a nurse who wrote a letter to the editor in advance of her death. And in the letter, she specifically wrote that my healthcare system killed me. And in the letter, she went into the fact that she brought up many issues that ultimately led to her burnout and moral injury and ultimately trauma that caused the death of her life. And for me, that should be an eye-opener for every healthcare system to look internally and externally. What are we doing to not have that happen? But again, I think many of us move on. We don't necessarily prioritize it. And my challenge to all of them is they have to.
Yeah, I'm really curious about that, because, you know, it seems like we agree entirely that leaders need to prioritize this, and it needs to come from the top down. We've been talking about that for a while. I know your work resonates with that very much. A question that I have is, once people prioritize it, it seems like you're saying they also think they need to reinvent the wheel, but there are all these great tools out there that they can use. So it feels like even if they care, they don't know where to start. They don't know how to get going. They don't know what the next step should be. Have you found that there are certain ways that you can get people or convince people that this is important, but then also give them those action steps to get rolling?
Yeah. I think what I would say to that is first and foremost, we've got to get back to the basics. We're all people. And so there is no healthcare without humanity. There's frankly no other industry without humanity. And so I think we have to first understand that fact. And then to your point, we have to sit back and reflect and say, how do we help people understand why it's important? And I always say, go back to experiences and go back to stories. If you ask anybody who's faced burnout, you will clearly be able to see in healthcare that there was something in the culture that contributed to it. So share those stories. Be open and willing to share those stories. And I think we have to have executives that are willing to challenge that. So I'll give an example. I worked for a CEO once that was a nurse, one of the best leaders I ever served with. Still consider her a mentor to this very day. And I will remember the battle she faced as the CEO when she said to our team, as a management team and the medical staff, we will implement a patient family advisory council. And that patient family advisory council will have every right to have their voices heard. And I can remember other executives said, well, we have to have our voices heard too. And she looked at them and she said, the door's there. When you're willing and able to listen first to our consumers, you can come back in. Now's not the time for us to tell them what we think they need to hear. It's our turn to listen so that they can tell us what's wrong with our healthcare system so that we can be the best for them that's possible. And I think we need leaders that are willing to say, I want to hear from everybody. Why is our organizational culture not working for you? Why is it that you're facing burnout? Why is it that you're facing moral injury? And hear from everybody, from the housekeeper to the food service worker, to the patient care technician, to the physician, to the nurse practitioner, to the executive, to middle management, all throughout. Take the time to listen. And I think what you'll hear in those examples and those stories are the exact solutions that should be implemented. But I don't think we're taking the time to truly go back to that fact of active, effective listening.
I completely agree. I think understanding the problem, understanding the perspectives of all the different employees is super important. I mean, I've worked in people analytics and, you know, employee surveys are so important. But then once you've done all that listening, the next step is huge, right? Now we've heard the story. Now we know what the problem is, where those pockets, maybe where those particular issues exist. What do we do next and how do we take that action? Because it's really... it's not easy to listen. I will say that, you know, taking that moment to listen and gather that information and really actually absorb it is a big step. But once you've listened, you need to take some sort of action. So after you go through that listening exercise, what would you recommend people do? I mean, with the actions, like how do they action? How do they take the time and prioritize to make these actions happen?
Yeah, I think you raised such an important point, right? And let me just say that I'm always torn on employee engagement surveys because I've seen so many organizations, at least is my experience of what I've seen them do. Instead of actually listening, they sit there and say, oh, no, we didn't do that. We're doing this. We're not. No, there's no way we're like that. And so, you know, I think that's why I'm a big fan of 360s, and I think they have to be, you know, very intentional. And it's why I also say boards and shareholders really need to be engaged in the process, because ultimately so much of these processes have not been open, have not been honest, and have not been transparent. And we know if you don't have a sense of belonging or mattering, there's no way you're going to truly authentically complete that survey. It's just not going to happen. I've completed them. And guess what? I've stopped to complete them at times because I've seen the type of reaction, even as a leader, some other leaders have. And that's just not right. And so I think we have to also create a better process for that too. But I think to your point, you know, surveys are one thing, but I'm a huge fan of we've got to truly get out there as leaders and spend time with everybody. No leader can tell me they don't have the time for that, because ultimately they all started somewhere. And ultimately they started in many of those exact roles that they'd be spending time with people. And I saw this in my career, particularly in hospital administration, where we had a CEO who started as a nurse and then another CEO who started in finance. The CEO that started as a nurse was always out and about, hearing their concerns and acting on them. The other CEO was choosing to be behind the desk, making decisions without really not knowing exactly what was happening. And I think to your point, we've got to prioritize based on the feedback. We have to be honest with the stakeholders because we may not be able to act on everything. But here's what we know. Don't just give me ice cream and pizza and say I care about you. Take the time to consider things like shifts. Are the shifts working? Take the time to think about tasks. Are the tasks working? Take the time to think about technology. Is it making our jobs easier or more difficult? Take the time to think about patient surveys. If our patients are saying, my clinician is not spending enough time with me, what is it in our culture or our workplace that's not allowing them to do that? It's kind of simple, but I don't think we have leaders generally who are thinking solutions focused rather than just thinking, well, no, we already have that. I think we have to have this understanding that every day there's something in our organization that could be causing stress. And we have to think about what it is and how it is to fix that. And to me, it's really being honest with ourselves that we're continuously learning, we're continuously developing. And I think mental health and stress is now, you know, the number one issue in the workplace. And I just don't think enough leaders are truly focusing on it. And it saddens me because we know lives are literally at stake.
Yeah, I think a lot of what you're pointing at is something really important, which is that organizations often try to fix the symptom as opposed to the problem. So, you know, we've mentioned before and in our conversations before this, this episode as well, Jeffrey, you know, it's not that those solutions are bad. It's not that, you know, mindfulness sessions are bad or yoga at work is bad or, you know, any of these things that people are offering to sort of reduce stress are bad, because there's always going to be some level of stress that your job entails. But when people are subjecting folks to a culture that produces burnout, stressful jobs that are not designed well, technologies that are frustrating, and then on the back end, they're like, oh, sorry, all of this stuff is stressful, but here's some yoga. It not only doesn't address the root of the problem, but it also frustrates people to some extent, because they're feeling like, you know, it's putting the onus on them to take extra time to do something to combat things that could have been solved at the root. So that, I think, is a really great way to, you know, kind of highlight what organizations are maybe getting wrong in this equation. So given those challenges that, you know, people have not in the past been prioritizing listening as much as possible, they're not necessarily taking action in the right areas, what are some things? Can you give us some case studies of things that you've seen that have really worked in organizations to boost workplace health and happiness?
Yeah. I think what I've seen work definitely well, and I think in healthcare it's really in many ways just starting, is really, you know, this creation of councils that, and I've seen some organizations actually do it, which I really appreciate. They're actually having an executive co-chair it with a staff member. And I think that that's a really important opportunity. Instead of just having a leader co-chair it, bring someone from the front line who's actually also dealing with it. And I've started to see organizations start to really think interdisciplinary, particularly about it. How is it that, you know, in our clinical areas, we need to focus on this, but then maybe in our non-clinical areas, we have to focus on this. And I've started to see that type of an approach. And I think that's a very healthy one. In many ways, that type of work was created, you know, by Cleveland Clinic and those types of places that clearly have demonstrated both a science and an art to this matter. I think the other piece I would highlight is I've started to see some leaders in healthcare, slowly, I'll add, I wish it was a bit more quickly, but start to say that this is a matter of safety. And ultimately, these issues are of paramount interest, and they should be viewed just as patient safety is at the highest levels within the healthcare system, including the board. I think that's extremely a positive step, because ultimately, we know, the data suggests, that if somebody in the workplace is stressed, is not of their best mind, there's a good chance there could be an injury to a patient. And that is not that person's fault. We've seen this. We've seen it time and time again where nurses have been, you know, taken to court in cases like in Tennessee and other states where ultimately they made a mistake. But if you really drill into it, they were stressed, they were burnt out. They even had examples of moral injury, and no one really dealt with it. And the saddest part is then when it went to court, the healthcare system almost wanted to act as if they weren't responsible and left the clinic, you know, the clinician to feel like they were totally responsible. And I will say that shocks me at some level. Some will say, how could that shock you at a corporate level? But it does shock me, because we are trained in healthcare early on that it's an all hands on deck. We are all in this together. And that means we've got to help and support and also be accountable to that collectively. But I am encouraged to start to hear several others start to really prioritize this. I've also started to see healthcare systems start to create positions dedicated to this. I will say don't always start at the C-suite, because unless it's really going to have engagement at the front lines, it's not necessarily the right approach in my opinion. But I am encouraged to at least see emphasis on wellness, on mindfulness at an executive level. My only encouragement to those organizations that are creating those positions is just make sure it actually has teeth. And just make sure you're actually engaging at all levels and not just at the physician level or the clinician level, because everybody particularly can face burnout. And I would also add, make sure it's really focused on our nurses, because if you look at where the biggest burnout, where the biggest stress is, it's clearly in nursing. And so I think those types of things are definitely positives. The final thing I would just say is, I think we're getting a great case study right now in pretty much every workplace. The data is so clear. On mental health and stress. I think the opportunity is in thinking about a multi-generational workforce that's existing today. How can the next group of leaders really make sure that this issue is an issue of the past? And I'm encouraged because I do think the next generation of leaders particularly are a bit more humanistic than maybe some of the previous. And so that piece gives me some hope.
I think everything that you've shared makes a lot of sense, like putting that investment in, having these councils created positions, like you said, make sure they have teeth behind them. It's not just a for show, we're doing this wellness role, right? But really investing the money and the time to have these positions do something different, I think is a great signal from leaders. Like, this is something we care about, and we need our leaders to be kind of role modeling that and sharing that perspective and showing the importance and the value behind doing anything to kind of improve wellness and employee burnout, et cetera. And I also wanted to just kind of ask you about anything else. Like, I know we've asked a lot of questions. We've talked a lot from like the leadership perspective and, you know, bringing in the staff members, whether that's through those councils or through the listening experiences, et cetera. But is there anything else that we've missed in terms of how we've been asking these questions that you think is really important for people to know in creating a better workplace, a better environment for employees within the healthcare industry?
Yeah. You know, one of the things that in healthcare, we don't do it enough, and we certainly don't do it from a standard operating procedure perspective, which I think should be. And I think it can be beneficial to all industries is debriefing. You know, when I look back in my days as a hospital leader, we would debrief after some of the most traumatic situations that our healthcare system faced. And those are moments that you never forget. I know those are moments that I'll never forget. But what came out of them was powerful. And I can remember as a leader never forgetting the moment that when we faced those as a system, not only did we all rally together, but we actually gave the space to the staff who were literally on the front lines to have their moment too. We invested in them. We brought psychologists in, psychiatrists in, so they could talk. We brought counselors in. We took them off their shifts. We brought nurses and clinicians from other places in the hospital to fill in for them instead of making them get right back in and do what they do. And I think we really have to get back to really leveraging debriefings really effectively, because I think in every organization, not just in healthcare, there is absolute great benefit to taking a moment to reflect, pause before we just jump right back into it. Same thing in a factory when something, you know, traumatic happens. You know, I think of healthcare because that's where I've spent my life. But, you know, there's some great work going on right now. And I can't remember, I think it was Stanford actually that just released this very, very powerful, powerful video that talks about the fact you wonder why there's so much burnout. Because we have a system that's treating our clinicians like they're a machine. They're literally, the analogy is so true. We literally are saying you could have, you know, you're in a place where you could have the most difficult surgery, open up a patient that you think you're going to have a chance to cure of cancer, but then open it up and see that that cancer has spread so far and wide that as soon as you close that up and that patient comes back to after anesthesia, you're going to have to inform that patient that it's not as hopeful as it was before. And then you're going to have to inform the family members. And then you're going to have to go right back to the next patient moments after that. And we know people choose healthcare. I'm not suggesting that we have to have pity because people do choose to serve. But we do have to understand the impact of those situations and take time to help them process it. Because ultimately, it is tough. And I know there's other industries that have that too. And so I think we have to have debriefings, very standard, really ensure. And also, let me just say, and I don't say this to be rude, but don't just tell me you have the EAP service. Because that is just not enough to truly demonstrate true mattering to me. It has to go beyond that. Every organization to me these days, oh, we have EAP. That's really wonderful. But guess what? I may not have time when I'm home to call EAP. I may not have time at work to call EAP. You don't know what I'm dealing with at home or in the workplace. So we've got to be very intentional about these things because we know that literally seconds and minutes matter in these situations. And I think employers, I always say, have a make it or break it moment for their employees. And I would just encourage them to make it.
Yeah. I think what you're really getting at really well is this idea of emotional processing and surfacing. And if you're not given a space to surface those emotions, people might assume that what you want them to do is suppress those emotions. And I think that that is at times, you know, sort of the norm that you experience something really emotional. As you said, you kind of stuff it down and go on. And these sessions to debrief help people to be able to actually acknowledge and manage those emotions in a way that's more effective. And it probably also contributes to learning, you know, what went well, what didn't go well, how can we help make this next time around even better? What are some things we could do to help protect ourselves, protect patients? So it feels like a win-win scenario to your point, but it's always that argument of like taking the time, like arguing that it's worth the time. And so I think, you know, the way that you're doing, you know, describing these benefits can be really, really helpful. One final kind of note on what people can do. Often when we're working with organizations, you know, you go in and you talk to people on the ground level and they're saying, well, you know, the problems really exist with the people above us. And then you go talk to those people and they say, well, the problem really exists with the people above us. And obviously we are all about these top-down approaches, but it can feel disempowering for people who are at the entry level to think, you know, well, there's nothing I can do. I'm just in a system where I'm, you know, unable to impact what's going on. Have you seen effective bottom-up solutions besides, I know you mentioned staff being involved in the councils and things like that, but have you seen those solutions really have an impact?
I think that they are without question in healthcare definitely starting, if they haven't already, right? Because we've seen leaders almost have way too much time to figure it out. And now we're seeing a lot of people on the front lines that are turning to other ways, whether it's turning to social media, turning to, you know, getting in touch with board members, getting in touch with others that are saying enough is enough. And, you know, I think all of us have seen, even on LinkedIn, this massive discussion of these issues in healthcare in a way that we have never done so before. And I think it's now reached a point where if you're a leader in healthcare and you're not hearing of these issues from people on the front lines, you clearly are totally disconnected because they're talking about them all the time and they're solving them. I have definitely heard and seen of frontline people working even with their middle managers to solve issues, you know, within their unit or within their department. And I think that's incredibly encouraging when we see that. And so I think it's definitely, if it hasn't already happened in your organization, it will. And I think if you're a leader, it's a great opportunity to provide the resources and support to help them make it really happen. Because ultimately, if they can prove that out, it's going to grow like wildfire in a very positive way if you resource it effectively and with the best intentions.
Yeah, so it sounds like advocacy is important from those levels, but also the, you know, being able to try to implement things themselves. But of course, then that takes the support of the leaders, whether it's the manager, whether it's more senior. So if, you know, if leaders are saying that they don't have time for all these different things, obviously we're saying make time, but also try to make time for people in other levels that can maybe make an impact and prove out some solution that would be valuable. I think that makes a lot of sense. So we've really enjoyed our time with you so far today. We want to kind of end on a couple of notes. The first one is we would love to give you an opportunity to let us know, you know, anything about your work, plug anything about your work that you want to share with our audience. We want to kind of make sure we're supporting you. So where can we find you? All those good things would be great for me right now.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, certainly encourage anybody and everybody to reach out on LinkedIn, very active there. Certainly sharing my thoughts and also contributing, you know, into these important dialogue around these topics and certainly others as well. Happy to engage there with anybody. And, you know, obviously I also share a lot about my collective work and our collective work there as well. Certainly if anyone ever sees something that piques their interest, don't hesitate. Happy to talk offline further about, how important that is. And let me just, you know, one thing I will plug too is, you know, there's a lot of dialogue right now about the importance of mentorship. And I'm encouraged to see that because I do believe that mentorship can have a transformative impact on the workplace culture, but also when it comes to issues like mental health too. I'm always saddened to hear how many people have not had a mentor. And we know it's very real in academia too, so I don't want to get started there. But we really need to make sure people have mentors that truly lift them up, inspire, empower, and encourage them. And I think for any leader out there, if you have not invested in supporting your people as a mentor, I would challenge that you're just not a leader. This is so important. And no one should hold the title of leader without supporting people. And I just can't highlight enough. I'm encouraged to see all the dialogue and hope to see more.
Well, we love everything you just said and agree wholeheartedly. And, plus one on the mentorship being very important and that leaders need to encourage a mentoring environment, a culture of mentorship. So moving forward from there, we have a final fun question, a question we think is fun. And when we were thinking about a question, Patricia mentioned that in her organization, they did an icebreaker that went over particularly well. And so we thought maybe we would ask you. It's a little bit of an odd question, but apparently everybody had a response. And when she asked me, I also thought of something right away. So we'll answer too. You're not the only one in the hot seat. But the question is, if you were a shoe, what kind of shoe would you be?
Yeah. It's such an interesting one, right? Because I almost have like two answers. I have like what sandal I would be and then what shoe I would be, right?
Right.
Obviously I'm a German American, so Birkenstock for sandals all the way. And obviously as a German by heritage, we wear socks with our Birkenstocks. And so, you know, Americans kind of go, oof. With that, but from a shoe perspective, I would have to say, you know, I do really like my Michael Jordan shoes right now. And, my son says he has the better ones, which that may be true because he's playing basketball with them, but I do enjoy mine. They're very colorful, very bold. Someone suggested to me recently that I wore them in a speaking engagement, but I do enjoy them.
I love that. And I love that you said Birkenstock because that's my shoe. When I answer, I'm like, I would be a Birkenstock, and mostly because I just love them so much. They're so comfortable. I'm glad that people think they're cool now because I feel like there was a time where that wasn't the case. I'm just going to say they're ultimately a classic, comfortable, great shoe. So that is what I want to be.
I went in a completely different direction. There was this shoe that Lady Gaga wore, and it was sort of like hoofed like that, and it was like the toes were like separated. It was like this large, tall boot. And I just thought of that shoe because I feel like it's like, I don't know, it's a little interesting, but still like, it's like bold, you said, is one thing, but I also just felt like I saw it, it stuck in my head, and there's something about it that I thought was fun. And so that would be the shoe that I would pick, the hoof boot.
That's awesome.
Well, thank you so much for answering our shoe question and for sharing with all of our listeners the amazing insights, your experience in healthcare especially. It's such an important topic in that industry. You know, we've had healthcare clients before. We've talked to a lot of people in healthcare. My mom is also in healthcare. My father-in-law is in healthcare. So we've got a lot of healthcare connections. And, you know, we can see all the challenges that people in that industry face. Mm-hmm. And I think the work that you're doing is so important. So thank you so much for sharing it with our listeners. And we'll have all the links for everybody to find you in the show notes. But thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome. Thank you so much.
Thriving at Work, a Worker Being podcast, is hosted by us, Dr. Patricia Grabarek and Dr. Katina Sawyer, and produced by Allie Johnson.